White Walker-perpetuated offenses are considered especially heinous. In Westeros, four dedicated friends investigate and discuss these vicious episodes as members of an elite squad known as A Podcast Has No Name.
I want to thank y'all for tuning into A Podcast Has No Name. This is your host, DJ Ambush. I am joined by a bunch of guests today. Really, really excited about the show. We're going to be discussing Warner Brothers' big move with moving all of their films for 2021 to the streaming app, to HBO Max. Got a bunch of guests with me today, like I just said. My man Andre, Ibrahim, Janelle, and Sean is in the building. Just going to go around real quick. Everyone can go ahead and introduce yourselves. First off, thank you. Thank all of you for showing up today. This is so early in the year. You know, 2020 is right behind us. The ghastly 2020 is right behind us. But we're coming into 2021 with a lot of hope and some criticism. I want tons of criticism. I want everyone to be as honest as possible as we're jumping through some of these discussion points today. So, Dre, you're up first.
Hey, what up? My name is Andre Cole. I live in Jersey. I'm from Queens, New York. What up?
Hey,
Queens.
Hey, East Coast.
Borough. I live in Jersey, though. Unfortunately. No. Jersey's okay. Jersey's okay. I live in the armpit of America. by trade, I'm a filmmaker, a quote-unquote content creator. I'm a video editor. Work with a bunch of three-letter networks. Also edit some stuff for Sesame Street. And this is how I make my money. MTV, BET, MLG, Activision. Just did some stuff for WWE. So
tight. Thanks, Dre. Janelle, what's good, B? You're up next.
Hey. Well, my name's Janelle. I'm from Philly. I'm living in Atlanta right now. I'm also a filmmaker. I started out with the letters. I started out at MTV.
The breeding ground.
Right? It was dope, though. I think Ambush, you remember that? I don't know if you
remember. Definitely remember.
That was like a big thing for me back then.
That was huge. That was huge for all of us.
Right?
We were winning for all of us.
Yep. I was part of the squad, and I was going to go do the major stuff. And now I make films. I've been everything from a coordinator to a production supervisor. I was a camera operator at MTV. I just produced my first movie. We just wrapped up on December 22nd. So... I mean, we kind of wrapped up because we had a snowstorm. So now we got two more days left to shoot that we're going to do January 19th. But it was It's pretty dope. It's called Fells High. It's a true story. So it was kind of surreal. And now I'm working at Marvel doing COVID stuff, trying to learn how this works. And, you know, working with the studio. I mean, it's not anything new anymore. It's not as cool as it used to be. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, isn't it? I'm sorry.
No, it's really not. Trust me. Ask Andre.
So fresh off of the Marvel mention, I like that. Ibrahim, yep, next, B.
Yeah, my name is Ibrahim Mustafa. I'm a comic book illustrator and writer from Portland, Oregon. If Jersey's the armpit, I guess we would be like the left butt cheek. I write and draw comics and graphic novels. I've done work for DC, Marvel, IDW, Valiant, pretty much all the comic book companies. Currently working at Humanoids, and I've got a book coming out on March 16th called Count, and I'd appreciate it if people would check that out.
Dope. And in the building with me, another East Coast representative. So happy he's in town. Sean, what's good, B?
What's going on, Ambush?
Chilling. Tell the people about yourself.
My name is Sean Mick. Born and raised in Philly. Went to college in Pittsburgh. Bounced around a little bit after that. And I've been DJing since, you know, I was a kid. And now, I guess by trade, I am a designer. I guess that's what we're labeling it as.
Yeah.
But basically, I went from focusing on music to focusing on footwear and picked up some marketing skills and other things along the way. And now I build systems. I build systems for businesses to consistently get customers, to tell a consistent brand story. I just spend all day drinking coffee and playing around in Notion.
That's about it. All right, bet. So, all right, let's just jump directly into it. So the first, I guess, whisperings of this was around when they first announced the release of Wonder Woman 84 on the HBO Max app. Now, here's the thing. I had HBO Go, HBO Now. I got lost in all the different whatever they had. All I knew was I wanted to be able to watch Game of Thrones and not be downloading it like I used to. So so I had whatever version of HBO I had. Then one day it just switched over to Max. And I was like, all right. I thought this was something I was going to have to pay for because I was looking forward to the Snyder Cut. So regardless, HBO was going to have my money. If me having HBO Now didn't mean I was necessarily going to get the Snyder Cut, then they were going to have me paying for HBO Now and HBO Max. It was just going to happen. So once everything switched over, I was like, all right, cool, cool. This works. Then I saw the announcement. And it felt cool at first, primarily because we've waited for so many films to drop in 2020 that didn't. Things just kept getting pushed back. So when they initially announced that Wonder Woman was going to hit the app, like, what were some of your initial reactions to that? What did you guys think?
I was really excited to not have to go to the theater. Personally, you know, the older I get, the less I want to be around other people in general, I feel like, and especially if I'm paying money to be in like a quiet scenario, you know?
Right.
I think I'm just not in that place in my life anymore. Like last movie I saw in the theater was John Wick 3, and it was literally just my wife and I, and then this other young couple showed up like a minute into the movie and they would not shut up. And like halfway through, you know, I can't even enjoy the movie, right? Because I'm like steaming, like they won't shut up. Halfway through the movie, I just leaned over. I said, hey, could you guys pretend like we're in a theater and be quiet?
I like that.
And it's like, I just don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be that guy. You know what I mean? So I was like, if I could watch this from my couch, I'm good.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I've been in a couple situations where I thought I was going to lose my mind if they didn't stop talking.
Yeah, and I will say after watching it too, I was doubly glad that I didn't pay extra money.
I was waiting.
The shot was fired early.
We're about 30 seconds in?
Yeah. Dre, what was your initial response, reaction to seeing it was hitting HBO Max?
I thought it was a super smart idea for Warner Brothers as a company, especially because of all of the nonsense. I know we're going to talk about it later, but the nonsense with just the moving of dates. And so the dates kept getting moved. Mm-hmm. And it just made sense to me because I know and working on the other side of, you know, working with marketing companies for films, I know that if you don't set up your marketing early, it can kind of affect how the film releases. So they have this entire gigantic slate, and it was just like, after a while, you have this big film, and they can't keep moving the big film date, right?
Because,
you know, all it does is it restarts your entire staff to, all right, we have to do all this stuff all over again. We have to kind of reenact all these things, that all these moving pieces that we had started. So I was like, okay, you know, smart. You know, put Wonder Woman 84 out on HBO Max. It's great for your bottom line. You know, you'll get people to, you know, subscribe to your thing, you know, to your streaming service. And then, you know, you'll get them the next time. You'll get them on 3, right? You'll get them on a third film because you'll kind of pull people in. You'll have all the people who are sitting in their house on Christmas or during that Christmas week, they'll get a chance to watch it. And that was my initial reaction was like, all right, that's smart. Just do it. I was hoping that Marvel did it with Black Widow. Because I was just like, just go ahead and just jump in, just do it. And then, you know, of course, you know, there's always a write-off somewhere. And then, like Ibrahim, I saw the film and I was like, yes, yes, you're smart. I'm happy you put this on your streaming service. And I'll leave it at that. I'll let you.
Janelle, did you view it as a smart move initially?
I viewed it as a money move. I'm not going to lie. Like I work in the production management side of things now, you know. I'm not going to say my creative days are definitely not over, but I haven't been on the creative sector in a really long time.
Gotcha.
So all I see is what they look at. All I see is the money. All I see is the bottom line. And, you know, yeah, everybody's going to be home for Christmas. Yay, all that stuff. No, they know nobody's going to the movies. And they know that their platform was not doing well when their numbers came out for that last quarter. And they were like, it looked like almost like a lazy move. But can we curse on here?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, but it was more like a fuck it. Let's just make our money. We don't care. You know what I mean? And I, you know, I'm in the room with certain conversations, you know, mm-hmm. not necessarily in development all the time, but I definitely talk to studio execs. And a lot of this stuff, even the jobs that we have are one big illusion. So, you know, like, it was a fuck it move. It was a, we need to make this money. So let's start with this. And move on from there.
Sean, were you anticipating this? Like, when they kept pushing it back?
No, I wasn't anticipating it. But the idea that came to mind, it's funny that this happens with a DC property, but it's the line from Endgame. We're in the Endgame now, right?
And we are in the Endgame.
They were not going to make what they wanted to make from this movie.
Right.
Whether they put it out now, whether they put it out 2 years from now, the jokes will be stale. The story will be, you know, like,
right.
You can't afford to hold on to these things, but for so long, they have to put it out anyway.
Yeah.
You might as well get some data and gain some market share with your new streaming app.
Yeah.
I think it just, they did what, I don't give them credit because they just did what makes sense. I don't think it's necessarily like genius on their part. It was their best option. It was clearly available.
It was
okay.
Yeah,
there's no creativity award here for it, but they went ahead and did the smart thing, which you don't often see companies do. So I guess we have to give them some credit.
Okay. Okay. So here's my thing. When Mulan hit Disney Plus, I was really excited about that. I was really looking forward to supporting the film. I went ahead and paid that 20 or 25 extra.
Better man than me.
To do it.
You paid 30, my friend. You paid
30. Was it 30? Is that what it was?
It was $30.
Let everybody know you paid $30 to watch that Mulan movie.
I did.
Did they throw a little tax on it?
I did. There might have been some tax on it. I don't know.
There was tax on it.
I said, I'm going to support this Asian film. I'm going to do it. And it felt great, you know. I was looking again. I don't know what it is. Maybe I got to get this sorted out. I'm too easy to part with my money when it comes to this entertainment. But again, I was ready to, you know, shell the ducats out. I was interested in what was going to happen with Tenet for the exact same reasons. Did I want to watch it at home? No. I wanted to watch it in the theater. Did I feel safe watching it in the theater? Absolutely not. But then we look and see what happened, right? This film that a lot of us have waited forever for, all the mystery surrounding it, it drops. And the numbers are what we expected because people are not going to the theater to watch that film. They just weren't, you know? So when I saw that they were pushing Wonder Woman, you know, for the streaming release, I was like, well, this just makes sense because this is what Christopher Nolan should have done. I understand, you know, the format in which he shoots his films. I understand that, you know, seeing it in IMAX is the way to see it. However, I felt like he was ignoring, you know, our current circumstances. We're in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. We're just in a pandemic. So circling back around to that, what were kind of some of your feelings around the Tenet release?
So I was incredibly excited for Tenet. Mm-hmm. I you know, I'm a big James Bond fan, right? I've written and drawn James Bond comic books. Like, you know, Nolan is a big Bond fan. This Denzel is my favorite actor. We had his son in this movie, right? I was time travel espionage. I'm in, right?
Right.
You know, it's interesting because Nolan is one of those filmmakers who is very specific about how he wants the audience to experience his work, right?
Yeah.
Down to the way he levels the audio. I mean, you can barely understand people in that movie. they even made the choice to have, God love him, old mushmouth Michael Caine eating food in his one scene in that movie. So he's delivering expository dialogue. I'm not shave at me about who was blah blah blah, and you're like, what? But anyway. I find it very interesting that Nolan wants people to experience his movies in the theater. And it seems like almost only in the theater, right? Because there's almost a very little regard for the home viewing experience as far as what we've heard from him, right?
Right.
And I think that's so interesting because his movies, especially a movie like Tenet, warrants multiple viewings. You know what I mean? I mean, I watched it twice in the same week. I took notes the second time. I was like, I'm going to figure this out, you know? And I think my enjoyment of it was definitely in part predicated upon the idea that I could pause it to go to the bathroom, which I had to do several times while I was watching this 3-hour movie. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think as creatives, we always want our work to be experienced a certain way, right? Whether that's, you know, music that we're playing or, you know, movies that we're making, et cetera. But we really have to meet the audience where they are. You know, we face a similar thing with digital comics versus print comics, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm all about however people can get it, do it. Legally, of course.
So there was like, you mentioned about, you know, his, not necessarily, well, yeah, disregard for the home viewer of his films. I felt like in some ways there was a level of disregard for our health. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. He said, panty or not, you got to come get
right. Like,
I ain't going to hold you. He kept it very Philly.
He did.
I did not expect that from Mr. Nolan.
I did not. Y'all gonna catch this film in the theaters. And it's like, Chris, you know we want this film. I honestly, I was like, just keep pushing it back, B. As much as bad as I wanted to see it, I was like, just keep pushing it back. Just keep pushing it back. But and then when it dropped, my brother and my nephew went to go see it. And he was like, there's only 25 people in the theater. And I was like, oh.
Have you explored the whole thing of like renting, you know, a theater like AMC? I think it's like $100 even at some locations, but you can basically have a private screening.
Yeah.
About $100, you know, take you and the homies in.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
Get the full Nolan experience.
Yeah.
That's not bad. I feel like if a movie, the regardless of whose movie it is, me as a, like when I put myself into the viewer's seat, if a movie is that good, if the story is that good, if everything is that, I can still watch Inception at home. You know what I mean? And so get that feel. I have a projector screen at home. It was $200. Like, it's not like, you know what I mean? If I love movies that much, I'm going to watch it the way it's supposed to be watched.
True. And
I feel like as far as his disregard for health and safety, his disregard for not meeting people where they are. I mean, we're talking about a major motion picture director. Have any of y'all met them? Oh my God, they don't live on this planet. I'm sorry. Not all of them are like that, you know, and I don't want to insult anybody.
Right.
But
they'll be okay.
Anything will, like literally anything will insult them, but as though anything can make them feel great. So it's like, do I care? No. If the movie's good, it's going to be good.
So you're saying that there's this detachment from reality.
Hell yeah.
Where the pandemic isn't even a factor.
Hell
it's still
yeah.
business as usual.
It's
I got
another 2020 plot twist.
Right.
you're talking about, there are so many factors in this. You're talking about a Hollywood person, talking about a Hollywood director, we're talking about a male, sorry guys, we're talking about a white male, we're talking about an older male.
Facts.
Who doesn't even probably do his own laundry anymore. So, no, he doesn't understand. You know what I mean? Like, he probably, if anybody in his circle had COVID, they could get that COVID cocktail on order, like Instacart. Like, it's certain things that just aren't thought about. Or, maybe he just was like, look, I already made this. You know what I mean? You really gonna make me put my movie out like this? Like, I mean, who cares what he thought?
Right.
I have a suggestion.
In all actuality, this is way more important.
Yeah.
Well, Nolan is also, he's a theater and a release snob.
Yeah.
So, and I noticed there's a theater that I love that he likes, and it's in Manhattan. It's Lincoln Center, right? So he loves this theater because they always project correctly. They project correctly. Their audio is 99% of the time, it's correct. And I know it was one of the theaters that he visited, and because when what's that movie with the war?
Dunkirk.
Dunkirk. So when Dunkirk came out, he was visiting movie theaters and approving both their sound and their projection.
Right. So who does
that? Right. So he does that. And so Lincoln Center was one of the theaters that he visited, and it's one of my favorite theaters to go to. He went there, he approved the sound, he approved the projection. It was like 70 millimeter IMAX or whatever, like he so I was like, so I read that and I happened to already have my tickets for opening day, so I was like, cool, like it's approved, it's what he likes, I'm gonna go see it.
Right.
And I went, I saw it, my review, whatever. But also there's this thing with him and how people sound, right? So we also had this issue of, I saw people saying, wait, what did he say? Wait, what did he say?
Yep.
And I was like, and I'm sitting there like, wait, I know he was in this theater. I know he approved that. So I was like, I guess this is what he wanted. But this is what he was.
Yeah, remember when Dark Knight Rises did that preview before like Mission Impossible or some movie, and you couldn't understand Bane, and they went back and like redubbed all his dialogue because they were like, people can't understand this movie. And even after that, I remember turning to my boy several times during the movie and be like, yo, what'd he say?
You know exactly what I mean? Exactly. And
go ahead.
He has RZA ears?
Just checking. Yeah, but he's a theater snob, and when that 6 minute preview or whatever came out, that was what, there was an article written in, I think, in the New York Times about people seeing it at Lincoln Center, because people know that 99% of the time their projection is correct. So if something's wrong, it's something wrong with the cut. It's something wrong with the film. And so they were like, well, people here were worried and they couldn't understand what Bane was saying. So then they had to redub his vocals. But also Nolan not paying attention to, you know, what's going on in the world. I don't know if it was something on his back end where he was like, listen, I make a percentage of the net of the first week, so I want my money, or if it was just strictly him being disconnected, or him just being the snob that he is. And I understand. Trust me, I love the film theater experience. I can't wait to get back to the theater, but I'm not going to do it during this pandemic. It's not going to happen. I'm not risking my health. I'm not going to the theater at all. The last film I saw in the theater, by the way, was that Harley Quinn movie, which is disappointing to me. I'm like, what if this is the last time I could ever go to the theater?
I could tell it was disappointing by you saying that Harley Quinn movie.
But you know, it's interesting too, because we don't, I mean, like Andre, you're just talking about the Lincoln Center experience, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and Nolan shoots in IMAX and this and that. My memory is not in IMAX. My memory is not in Dolby Digital Surround. You know what I mean? So like when I watch a movie and I look back on it, and I think, oh yeah, that scene was dope. Oh, that fight scene was cool, whatever. It's not in HD. So it's kind of like, it's cool for the experience in the moment, right? But then like afterwards, it's kind of like, it sort of doesn't matter anyway, you know? And, you know, with home theaters being what they are now, just speaking of, you know, not even theater setups, but like TVs. I mean, Janelle was just saying, you know, a projector's $200. Like I sit in the back row of the theater personally. So I feel like the distance from my couch to my TV is like approximate to that anyway. So it's like, you know, the big screen is almost, you know, yeah, exactly.
So I ain't going to lie. There is something in me that kind of loves the fact that he's this particular, that he does this level of quality control with the movie houses that he goes to. It was like, okay, this was approved by, all right, cool. Because again, this is him delivering his idea in completion. So right. Yeah, I'm cool with that. If you're going to make sure it's super right for me, then that's cool. So I have less of an issue with that. But you definitely bring something to the table, Janelle, talking about, you know, what it really looks and feels like for people at that level to be so disconnected from the rest of us.
Yeah, I mean, like,
can I ask?
Learn from those type of people, to be honest. Like when we were rocking like real heavy in Philly Ambush, like I used to go to FYE, or which once was Tower Records, every week, every time I got paid. I had these little part time jobs. I would go get paid. Questlove would be in there. I walk right by him. He'd be in the record section. I go upstairs. I go to the bargain bin. I go get all the indies and pay for them, right, my little paycheck. And
right,
so be such a movie nerd and such a movie snob. And it was so cool. And I loved it. And I learned from those types of people. I mean, like, the way everything from the way M. Night Shyamalan tells stories, like, it's very similar. Like, there are certain particular things that these people care about. It's mm-hmm. so dope. Like, these are the people who make things the reason why they are the way they are now. However, I am a Black girl from West Philly, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Who was brought up going to 52nd Street and going getting bootlegs. You couldn't always, I was getting dubbed out karate movies. Like, you couldn't always sit there and listen to the sound.
Right.
You couldn't. Right. Sometimes the lighting was off. Because of these people, I can literally sit and watch a movie and I can tell you how they lit it. I can tell you the sound. I can tell you when they dub something over. I can tell you when there's a cut in the green screen. I can tell you when they shot it with a green screen, when there's VFX. I can tell you a lot of things. I can ruin a movie for you. But the reality in me knows that I can sit there and do all that and sit next to a person that's like, yo, he got on the same green shirt that he had on in the last movie. And I'm like, yeah, nobody cares. It's like these things, they matter, but they don't at the same time, which is what I meant when I said even our jobs okay. are an illusion. Like, nobody knows that the costume designer and the production designer are collaborating and making whoever's scene that is, their shirt, their shoelaces match the painting in the background. Like, nobody knows that. You know what I mean? No, nobody knows that when a scene is red, when it's lit red, it's about to be a passionate scene or a fight scene. Nobody knows that when there's drama, when there's danger coming in a movie, there's a slight angle and tilt to the camera called a Dutch tilt. Like, nobody knows that. So it's almost like the woman who can cook a grand Christmas dinner and nobody says, yo, we give you all your roses right now. But when you're watching them all pass out while they're watching TV, that's your roses. You know what I'm saying? So it's almost like, dog, okay, nobody's going to go to the Lincoln Center who lives in Iowa. But people from Iowa watching movies. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, that's a small, minuscule percentage of your audience. But yet, people still like your movies. You know what I'm saying? People still watch them. You still cash out. And I think what Andre said when he was saying that, you know, he couldn't tell whether it was because he makes a big payday off of the theater release or you know, if it was in fact that he wanted it to be seen the way it was supposed to be seen or heard the way it was supposed to be seen, heard, or if he just doesn't have a regard for COVID at all. It's all of those things.
Mm. Now, based off of that, Janelle, I'm curious what your take was on that Tom Cruise Mission Impossible rant that the
other day. It was funny that you asked that because one of my coworkers who I watched come up in the game, I know a guy who was my intern in 2012 who is now eligible. He just joined the union in the coordinators union. And I watched this kid, this bright eyed young white guy who was so sweet. He's so happy to be on his first movie. And now he's like, ah, fuck it. I'm a coordinator. I'm in the union now. I have health insurance. I'm tired of trying to figure out what the hell I want to do. I really wanted to be in special effects and blow shit up, but fuck it. They don't have room for me. And now I got health insurance. I watched it. I'm watching this. And I watched him. He's the first person that I ever saw even like post that on like social media. And he posted it and his rant was amazing. And he's like, listen, everybody on these crews gets tested. Tom Cruise has no, I want to read it. I want to pull it up just to find it. I wish I could have pulled it up right now. Like, it would take me a second to go through it, but
it was some bars in there.
It was definitely some bars in there. And like, it's like one of those things where it's like, you're right, but you're wrong at the same time.
Yep.
So you feel like he's wrong in the way he delivered it.
He's wrong in the way he delivered it. He's wrong in the fact that, honestly, I told you, some of these people who work in Hollywood, it could have been anything. Literally, the hair and makeup ladies could have been doing the same thing 10 minutes earlier, and he would have probably not even, he had blinders on. You know what I'm saying? It could have been anything. It could have been that guy took the last pretzel at Crafty. It could have been that. It could have been that somebody else pissed him off. He could have been in character. It could have been a very real situation for him. It's like when it comes down to it, I don't know if I have tough skin because I work in Hollywood or if I just seen so much. Like the things that move people, provoke people, and make them tick, it's like different at any given time. Like, right. It's like, and it varies, and it's all based on something that the average human being with normal people logic would be like, that's not, that's weird.
Yeah. See, that was cause you know, I was thinking like, it almost sounds, I mean, first of all, I agree with you all, you know, what he said was right. The way he said it was, you know, maybe a little out of bounds for some people. I personally think everybody should get yelled at like that about COVID at this point. Yeah. Right. But, it almost seemed like an impression of what he thinks regular people would sound like talking about this thing. You know what I mean? Cause like, when's the last time Tom Cruise had to think about the words college tuition, you know what I mean? Or like food on the dinner table. So part of me was just wondering, I guess, like how much he was really advocating for people, or like if he was just kind of, I don't know. I mean, I've seen people speculate it was like a Scientology stunt type of thing. I don't know about all that. But like,
nah, they're doing a sequel to what was the Titans? Remember the Titans football movie? He wants to be the coach in the sequel. Oh, yeah.
I found it.
You found it.
It made me think of what Janelle was saying about Nolan and just being so out of touch. You know what I mean? Because that was my thought about that whole thing too. Is like, this is the last time this man ever thought about anything that normal people think about, you know?
Don't Dre, I've seen rich black people act just as out of touch too.
Listen, I was just about to go there. I said, Dre, I was just about to be like, there was something romantic about it for me. There was some Dame Dashery, some, you know,
yes,
definitely early in the Def Jam office.
Yeah, there was something about it that was back in the days when I used to idolize Dame, but it was like, you tell him, Tom, let him know.
Yeah,
you let him know.
Well, that's the thing about that's the thing about him saying all of that stuff, is that there's truth in everything he said, but also in listening to it. First of all, I've been in those meetings where people have yelled at people. Actually, a guy I know, a friend of mine, was the person who recorded Dame Dash yelling in that Def Jam meeting. So I've saw it before it kind of got released and kind of leaked or whatever, but it, which is interesting because it's long. But one thing about him saying it and the way he's saying it, by the time he gets like to the point where he's saying, I've been on the phone with producers, I immediately thought, okay, this is about something else. Like this is Tom had just probably come from a meeting or come from a call from the studio. They're worried. They're telling them, we're going to have to shut your film down again. You're going to have to get pushed this back. And he's the producer of the film. Like, don't get it twisted. Like, Tom's hands on with those Mission Impossible films. And it's crazy to the point where, and he gets anything he wants. They throw money at everything. I know people who've worked on a couple of those films. They can get whatever they want in a moment's notice. We need a diamond. We need the biggest diamond in the world. Okay, Tom, whatever you want. So, it sounded to me after a while, it was just like, listen, he probably got the call saying, we might have to shut your film down. You have to make sure everything's okay. And as he's probably walking from his trailer, he saw, you know, a crew guy, whoever it was, and it just made him, it turned ignition on him.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And so he flipped. And I get it. As a producer, I get it. But there's a way, as everybody knows, to address it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I've read people say, oh, he should just fire those people, whoever. I mean, I don't know who the people were that he was speaking to. They probably were in a union. It probably was, it honestly probably was somebody actually higher up than most people think.
Wait a minute. It was like a grip. I mean, give me 2 seconds. I will.
Go ahead, Janelle.
Yeah, it was like a grip or something. I'm going to, I wish I could tell you who it was, but this guy that I know, I'm not going to say his name, he said, Cruise is absolutely trash. He is an adrenaline-addicted nut job, and every piece of media about him is orchestrated by his cult. That's a personal problem, but he says, it's easy to be so mean when production is renting a $20 million mansion for you and your entire entourage to isolate.
Yep.
What?
I guarantee you, if he just got a phone call or got out of a meeting, he got out of a phone call or a meeting because maybe three or four people tested positive and they freaked out. The studio freaked out, which happened, you know? So then my friend, someone says, you know, you can argue that the cost of production delays due to breaking protocols, blah, blah, blah. And this guy says, for the record, I'm a union production coordinator. He just joined the union. So that's where I'm talking from. I also just worked with players in the NBA who were big problems as they kept the lid on a lot of it. The point is productions spend literally millions of dollars on COVID protection, testing and monitoring. On my last job, we got tested 3 to 5 times a week. Had crew living in small hotels in complete isolation, one monitor for every 6 crew members. The last thing anyone needs is an actor pretending to be the authority on COVID and then going home with his crew to their million-dollar accommodations. I can guarantee you that every single person on that set was being actively monitored, tested, and tracked by multi-million dollar operation for that movie alone. So this bullshit about Tom Cruise alone fighting COVID on his movie is garbage. That's real shit.
Wow. Real shit.
Yep.
That's why I asked Janelle right now. That's what I was looking for.
Ibrahim knew she had the tapes.
I could tell.
Wow, that definitely okay. So it was a PR stunt. A
production coordinator, like this is real. That's right. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, and that's from our perspective. And there's something else from someone else's perspective. This might not have been orchestrated by his cult, but it was definitely capitalized off of.
Yeah.
I think we should just let the short king go off. You know what I mean? I'm 5'5" and you know, Mr. Cruz, he's in my orbit. Sometimes you gotta just get in your historical Napoleon bag and do what needs to be done. You yell once and you don't have to yell again.
Or at least until the next film.
Look at Christian Bale. He said, "Good for you," and he's set now.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
And just to reiterate, these people are like $200-300 million people. Screaming at people who make $100,000 to $200,000 a year, if that, and not every year. So these people work their fingers to the bone. I'm one of them. You know what I'm saying? Like I've just finished 2 movies since COVID, and I'm exhausted, man. I slept through Christmas. You know what I'm saying? Like, I bullshitted my way through Christmas gifts. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't go to baby showers. I don't care about your housewarming. You know what I'm saying? Don't yell at me for sitting next to my coworker.
All right, so listen. I'm glad we're getting it inside, you know, inside a report on what these people are like. Is there any legitimacy? I think there is, to the complaints that these directors and studios are having with the way that HBO announced this. Like, they didn't give anyone a heads up, from what I understand.
Yes.
That they were snatching the whole slate and throwing it on HBO Max.
That's foul. That was where I had an issue with it. Because, and you know, when I first heard about it, I was like, oh, cool. And I was like, in back of my mind, I'm thinking, surely, you know, this has been like the secret that they've all been keeping. And then all of a sudden, all these directors are like, nope, didn't know. Nope, found out when you found out. And
secret.
And that's when you really know, like Janelle said, that's when you really know it's the money play. Because if you don't go to these directors, if you don't go to these filmmakers, if you don't go to especially the lead actors who some of them have these, you know, net profit deals and the agents, because you know CAA and WME, they went fucking ape shit because they were like, wait a minute, because they know that their percentage is getting knocked down because there's the deal in place. So as soon as that happened, I was like, well, you know, you should at least give the respect to these people to say, hey, this is what it's going to be. You don't, because they don't have a choice. Like, this is what it's going to be, and this is how we're going to try to do it, and we'll make it good for you on the next one. Something. Say something. Don't just all of a sudden, especially for some of these giant films, just, you know, throw them, say, oh, yeah, they're all going on our streaming service without a heads up, because you just disappointed. You know, you never know what, you know, a person like Zendaya or who, these other people who are, you know, other actors who have, you know, they were probably, you know, they have these other machines, which I learned working with some of these movie publicity people. It was like, there are these other machines going on around, oh, this film is going to come out this time, so I have to plan my album, or I have to plan my, you know, my magazine covers, or I have to plan all this stuff around it. And all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, streaming, whatever, we're good. We're going to kick all this stuff over here. We're going to get our money through the streaming side of our, you know, multi-billion-dollar conglomerate.
Another thing they did was just corner the movie theater market. They just basically new jacked them. They took it out right from underneath of them and was like, "You don't need this," because AMC was like, "I think AMC is getting the best deal with them," and they still are like, "We're gonna run out of cash in January."
Sheesh.
Yeah, there's other theaters that are like, we didn't even get that deal, so fuck you very much.
You don't need that Amazon STEMI package or something.
Yeah. So I'm gonna run down a quick list of what's on the slate for 2021. Suicide Squad, Matrix 4, Dune, Godzilla vs. King Kong, the new Space Jam, The Conjuring. Devil Made Me Do It. Can't wait for that shit. Many Saints of Newark, In the Heights, Judas and the Black Messiah, Mortal Kombat, Tom and Jerry, King Richard, and Little Things. Those Who Wish Me Dead, Reminiscence, Malignant, Cry Macho. And there's a couple other joints I think I'm missing. But hearing that rundown, some of the movies that stick out for me, definitely Dune is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Dune, Matrix 4, I could do with or without another Matrix. Am I right? I'm interested in, you know, what story they want to tell. But just looking at the size of these films, like Suicide Squad, I can't remember the damn director's name at this point.
James Gunn.
James Gunn. He said this is the biggest picture he's done. And that's major to me coming off of Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. Like, those films were incredible.
But not and the, you're saying, the budget wasn't, though.
Exactly. So for you to say this is the biggest picture you've done,
yeah,
and this is about to go straight to HBO Max, yikes. Yeah. Yikes. Yeah. Any of those releases stick out for you guys?
Movies for on in the theater as much as I used to. I'm kind of with Ibrahim. Like, look, I'm older now. I don't really care. Last thing I watched was Queen and Slim on a movie theater, and it was kind of funny just to watch other people in the background go, "Girl, don't you know?" You gotta miss that, especially like in New York and stuff like that. But I don't really need to watch a movie in the theater anymore because I know why I'm watching it and I know how to watch a movie. But I definitely would have watched Judas and the Black Messiah because it's a black director. Oh, yeah. Ryan Coogler is one of the producers. It's about the Black Panthers. They can get my money.
Right.
You know? So that's it, though. You know, maybe The Matrix. Suicide Squad probably would have been good. Dune, definitely. If you think about what would be good in the theater, yes.
Yeah.
Some of them would definitely be good in the theater. But the honeymoon is over for me in the film business. Like, I'm not in love like I used to be. I'm in love, but it's like more of a, this, we 30 years deep. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, I know what you look like. All of you. The whole thing. Like, I don't care what you sound like anymore. I know what you sound like. I know what the potential is. I know what you meant. But Judas and Black Messiah could have got my money.
Got you.
The 8-year-old in me is completely here for Space Jam. it's going to be a dumb movie. I got it. I want to see what other NBA stars are going to be in there. I want to see what sneakers debut in there.
But them
playing this essentially is like a Warnerverse sort of crossover, pulling from all the W Warner franchises. I'm going to watch. It's going to be entertaining. And I'll have to rewatch it to miss some cameos in the background, like I did with Endgame.
You know what I mean? Oh, absolutely.
There's going to be like some equivalent of Howard the Duck somewhere in the background. Yeah.
Oh, Ryan Coogler helped write that too. So maybe they could have got my money. And LeBron James was.
Right.
I want to see what LeBron's hairline is going to look like for this movie.
talk about like VFX.
Right. Don't go with the Beijing practical effects. You know what I mean? I don't know which way they go. The fibers.
What are we doing here? Dre, anything on that list stick out to you?
I mean, it's a pretty long list. Judas and the Black Messiah, when I first saw the trailer, I was like, oh, that's crazy. And when the list came out of the films, I keyed in on mostly the sci-fi films. But then when I saw that, I was like, oh, wait a minute. This is literally their entire slate. So then I started thinking of all these other ideas. And I know that they're supposedly kind of pushing Judas and the Black Messiah for Oscar contention, blah, 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 because they're trying to shift you know, the world basically with this whole HBO Max thing. But I think of the films, Dune as a large scale film was a film I was looking forward to see it in the theater. But I'm also, like I said, when I say I'm a theater, like I love the experience, I'm one of the people who have a subscription. Well, had a subscription. So I had MoviePass. I have the AMC A plus whatever that thing, A list. So, you know, I was going to movies, you know, even if the movie didn't look great, you know, I had no skin off my back, you know, I didn't pay anything extra to see it. So I was going to see IMAX. I was seeing everything in IMAX. Everything. Right, so because it didn't matter. Right. There was no extra. I wasn't paying $25. I wasn't paying, you know, to see it. I was just paying whatever it was for that month, $20 a month or whatever. So I'm always in the theater. So I was going to see many of these films in the theater anyway because it was no skin off my teeth. I can do it, whatever. But definitely Dune, definitely Judas and the Black Messiah. I was interested in seeing what happened with Space Jam because the original director was a young black guy who was real quirky. Not Terrence Nance, I don't think. I forgot his name. But then he got pulled off the film. I actually met him in Sundance. He got pulled off the film and then Malcolm Lee took over. So it was like, oh, one young black director for a more seasoned black director who, you know, kind of knows the Hollywood system, which is exactly what it was because the original black director, he's very quirky. Oh, man, I'm about to look up his name, but very quirky. So I was like, how is this going to work out? Because he's not the studio guy. And so with the whole idea of this whole Warnerverse thing, and, you know, just like Sean said, you know, what are they going to do? How are they going to make it a better film? Because they have to. They should try to make it a film, better film. But with Dune, the spectacle of Dune, and it being hard to, that film's hard to make, like, period. Like, the first one, whatever, the books is, like, dense. It's just a lot to do. So when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, they actually went for it. The director is somebody who I really like his work. He's done a lot of great stuff. So it was like those kind of, it was really those two or three films were the films that I kind of was really looking forward to. But, you know, I'll say it now, and it's not cool for me to say it as a creator, but Warner has been dropping duds. So I was kind of concerned across the board. And part of it is because of their studio structure and the issues they have with their leadership, but that's just like a wholly different story.
Well, I mean, that goes right back to what we're talking about though, right? Issues with their leadership and the decision not to warn anyone, not to give anyone a heads up. Are any of these films for you guys something that you'd roll the dice on? Because they are still being released in theaters. They're doing theater and streaming releases for some of them. Are any of these some joints you'd be like, I'll rent the theater out. I'll drop that bean real quick. I'll do a private screening. Any of these?
Godzilla vs. King Kong. I'm renting. That's the spot.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Might be six of us in there, but I'm renting the spot.
That might be the move. Yeah. That might be the
move. For me, it's about time. Like, it's about what I'm working on right now, how much time I got, and who's available. So it's like, you know, I would love to be able to have my pick. But honestly, the way my time is set up, it really depends. It really just depends. Like if I'm not busy and Space Jam 2 is coming out and my folks are free and I'm free and I'm like, yo, now, right now, let's do it. Hurry up before they call me. Then that's what we're doing.
That. You don't got no time, Janelle. You know you're not going to.
It's weird, right?
Yep, zero time. So let me ask you guys this. Overall, how do you feel about just the move in general? Take the lack of concern for the directors and the production studios and take all of that. As a consumer.
It's interesting.
Films are going to be right there on HBO Max for you. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, that convenience level is amazing, especially, you know, COVID's going to be around for a while. Even with the vaccine, you can still communicate the virus to other people. You know, we're not out of mask territory yet for probably another year at least. Like, right. People aren't getting vaccines until the summertime. You know what I mean? So from that respect, I think it's excellent. It is, you know, and we've touched on this a few times. There's sort of a broader concern that I have with the sort of scorched earth approach that Warner is taking with a lot of things. I mean, on the publishing side, you know, I've had a lot of friends who got laid off from the DC publishing offices. Mm. I mean, they really gutted editorial and some of the other support positions in the last couple of months. You know, people, industry veterans, have been there 20, 25, 30 years, you know? Yeah. And I think there's just kind of a, you know, I mean, maybe for lack of a better term, wanton disregard for the people that are making these things. And I think we're seeing it across the board with their different divisions. And so, you know, and somebody mentioned earlier the way that it undercuts the theaters, right?
Yeah.
We're seeing a similar thing in the comic book industry. You know, theaters, there are a lot of analogous, you know, a lot of similarities between theaters and comic book shops that are specific, you know, specialty retail stores, essentially.
Yeah.
And without that distribution system, you know, it remains to be seen how the medium itself can survive. So, you know, in the short term, it's great. And, you know, it's part of this larger awakening we're having, I think, as a consumer society, where it's like we're realizing that there are a lot of middlemen that might be a little bit extraneous at the moment, you know?
Yeah.
And what does that look like moving forward? Even, you know, from everything from movie theaters to specialty shops to office space, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's a new paradigm. And I mean, yeah, in the short term, it's tight. I don't want to have to leave my house. In the long term, I do worry about, you know, all of the ecosystems that rely on this stuff.
I just feel like the world is changing and you got to figure it out. If you've been in this business in length of time, you already know how to play chess. I had to read all those books in order to even be in this business because I did not understand it. I was working with people. I didn't come from this. So, like, you know, I had to read the 48 Laws of Power. I had to read The Prince by Machiavelli. This is a Machiavellian move if I ever seen one. And if you haven't thought of it, then you got to get on the train, or you got to find your own train. And it's like that from the top to the bottom.
Right.
Well, to piggyback.
Yeah, because the doors open and close with or without you, right? It's just a matter of what side of them you're going to be on.
And nothing personal.
Right.
As far as Nolan, back to Nolan not being okay with, you know, this switch, he doesn't own his content necessarily. So when you do have the ownership, and ownership, even in, you know, bringing it back to Dame, how Dame owns a streaming platform. You know what I mean? He has his faults, but at the same time, because he is also distributing his own content, he has control over how it's distributed.
And right.
It's fair, I think, for artists when they partner with large corporations to, you know, have their wishes respected, but understand that the format in which it's released is your wish and not your demand, because it's not solely your thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So going over some quick numbers, posted December 8th, HBO Max subscribers surged nearly 50% in 6 weeks. So this was leading up to the release of Wonder Woman 84. Mm-hmm. And then see what we have here.
How much did it drop after?
I want to say, what did the stock do?
I want to see that. You got to check that. It says Wonder Woman 84's choice to opt for a limited theatrical run has still yielded immense gain. It's currently the highest grossing post-pandemic film, which is a weird ribbon to give someone.
Yeah, right.
Pulling in an estimated $85 million worldwide.
Yeah, it probably cost $150 million to make.
Right. Right. So there was a huge surge in subscribers. They said like half of HBO Max subscribers watched the film within the first day or two. And then now, you know, they're jumping to production for the third film, So I feel like they're feeling like this was a success, regardless of the mixed reviews, which I am more than happy to allow you guys to jump into. I feel like everyone has seen it.
I do think that move, though, to put that one out on streaming and then to immediately announce a follow-up, it does to me kind of smell a little bit like, yeah, we know it's not that good, so we're putting it out there so that, that we don't get killed at the box office. And we're going to, hey, guess what? Another one's coming. You loved it so much, you know?
This definitely gives me Thor 2 energy.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh. So, that having been said, Dre, what'd you think of Wonder Woman 84?
All right, how do I do this? All right, because I've been trying to be really good about shitting on people who create stuff. So I'll start with love, right? I thought the acting, there was some really good acting. In general, the VFX were really good, right? And so when you have those two things, you can have a good film for what it is. The big spectacle films, the big quote-unquote blockbuster films, you can have this stuff. The issue here is the same issue that I've had with all of the DC films except for the Nolan Batmans, is that the story and the characters were all not well shaped. So when you get into, as well as them having, I read, unfortunately I don't have the person's name, somebody tweeted about the issues with culture, which I had a problem with immediately when I saw it. There's this whole part, and no gigantic spoilers, but there's this whole part about her going to this like Middle Eastern country, and she like, and it's like weird, and like, oh, this is middle, I don't, it's like this fantasy Middle Eastern country, and she like saves some kids, but if you look, like the kids have like a cross between Indian, Egyptian, and like Saudi Arabian outfits. It's weird. Like the whole idea of it is weird.
You trying to do the Black
Panther? It's definitely the Middle Eastern Wakanda,
right? But
so it, here's but it was, the thing. I'm Egyptian, right? And that whole scene was supposed to be in Egypt. You had Amr Waqid, who is like a great, great Egyptian actor, playing this prince, which is like, Egypt doesn't have a royal family. Idea, I guess, was that he was supposed to be like, you know, trying to get his land back, what, you know, that would have been his under the royal decrees or whatever. But it's like, it was all kinds of, you know, wonky from that perspective. But then, and this is the part that was really hard for me to swallow, you have Gal Gadot, who is a Zionist. An Israeli Zionist, you know what I'm saying? Like, who trained with the military, and she's saving Egyptian kids from a missile that was fired at them as part of like a plot to save these children, like save them by throwing a missile at them, and that she can ride it to. And you know, there was an actual like drone strike of some kids in Palestine playing soccer on a beach. Right. And so this was like, you know, way too close to that for comfort. And I've even seen people hypothesize that part of the reason they did such a specific scene that seems to reference that is that, so when you Google Gal Gadot, who was like apparently pretty vocally in support of that, you know, military movement or whatever, that it will change her SEO. You know what I mean? Wow. So when you Google her in this incident, that's what comes up. And, you know, maybe 4 years ago, I wouldn't have believed that, you know, or would have looked at it a little sideways. But now I'm like, yep, makes sense. You know what I mean?
I mean, that's pretty high level. Yeah. That's textbook reputation management in SEO.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, just as a personal little point to it, like there's a scene where the Steve Trevor is driving that taxi that they're in, and the windshield gets destroyed, and he slaps away like the mirror and the rest of the windshield. Right.
Right.
Hanging from that windshield is a little tasseled kind of medallion thing that says the word Allah in Arabic, right?
Right.
To have a white military man slap that with such a, you know, even like, it wasn't, I'm sure it wasn't intentional, but the Egyptian in me and the, you know, the lapsed Muslim in me was like, oh, like I felt that shit in my soul. You know what I mean? Like, because I know that not only was he hitting it, but that shit's going to end up on the ground. And that's like a double, like,
right.
You wow. know,
you don't do that. Wow. Have me clutching my prayer beads. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Basically taking yeah. what Ryan Coogler did and what he basically did for Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
And all the research that went into that and the reasons why he did it, they completely missed everything.
Right.
This was yeah. like, I just want to throw a whole bunch of stuff in there and make a gumbo.
Yeah, and here's the kicker too. Jeff Johns, who co-wrote that movie, is like half Lebanese. So okay. I'm like, bro, come on.
What are we doing? What's happening?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. It should have been handled with way more care and attention.
Yes.
Well.
Wow.
I haven't seen Sorry, guys. Today was the first day that I actually went outside for my own purposes since I got back from Philly from shooting this movie. I have been exhausted, so I haven't watched anything.
I didn't know how vocal she was. I was her being a Zionist. I was completely unaware of that. I don't know how I missed it, but I was completely unaware of it. And then someone brought it to my attention on Facebook afterwards. I put a post on Facebook basically just saying I'm seeing a lot of criticism from people that are completely outside of the universe. Like they're so far removed from the content and the characters that the criticisms just aren't landing for me. Like people doing think pieces on why they're white Amazonians and it's supposed to be in the Amazon. And I was like, what are you talking
about? Oh yeah. That's something like, totally different.
Bruh. First off. And then there were also other people saying, you know, DC didn't look dark enough. And then someone else, DC native was like, we're talking about this time period. They purposely shot scenes in this film in sections of DC that were segregated. Like it wasn't always Chocolate City the way we know Chocolate City. Like you got to understand what DC was in the '80s. But then on top of all of that, my major thing I wanted to just kind of remind people of, unless your universe has a Superman in it, we're not talking about the same place. So I feel like let comics be comics. And then when they turn into films and they have highly respected actors and actresses in it, it doesn't make it any more real. It's still a comic book, guys. So like,
I mean, the whole plot of this movie is based on magic. Right. So it's like,
right.
Your suspension of disbelief has to be pretty firmly intact.
Right. Like, where are the people that are complaining that the president didn't look like Reagan? What are we doing? Like, need everyone to back up a little bit. Understand this is a freaking comic book. Now, that having been said, I enjoyed it as a Christmas film with my with my family on the couch. You know,
did the girls like it?
Say again.
Did the girls like it?
They loved it. They loved it. You know, hey,
they don't know.
That's honestly what matters.
Yeah.
My 11-year-old, she didn't like it, and she was spotting some of the stuff, some of the disconnects that, like, we go into these films, and she's seen a bunch of stuff. So I go into these films immediately, like, well, my bar was super low anyway, because I'd already heard that people didn't like it. So I was like, well, you know. I haven't really liked a lot of DC comic films, so it's okay. I'll just go into it and see whatever. But she was sitting there like, that couldn't happen. What are they talking about? What is it? That's a sense. Like she like and it just kept like it kept like it snowballed to the point where she was just kind of after a while she was hate watching and I was like wait let's keep and she was like no, but and it was all story. So well, it was 90% story. So 90% of the story, it didn't connect with her. So she was just like, that doesn't make any sense. Why would they do that? And so in the beginning, the first 30 minutes of the film or whatever, well, first like 10, 15 minutes, I was watching it and I was like, oh, it's campy. I get it. It's campy. And this is what people didn't get.
Right.
Oh, people didn't get campy. I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, I'm going to watch the rest of the film. It's campy. And then when it became the story wasn't clicking and it wasn't campy, I was like, well, wait a minute. It was like a mixture of genres in the bad way where
right.
Oh, this sounds like my kind of hate watch.
Right. And right. It just wasn't connecting the right way.
like there was a issue with tone where like, okay, stick with the tone. Oh, you're not okay. Now it's a different kind of tone, and now it's this, and now these things aren't making any sense anymore. Like they weren't making sense for the universe. So, and these are the things that I'm watching and I'm thinking, and then, you know, a minute later, she's yelling and she's 11 and she's just like, you know, she might be a tells an 11, but she's like picking it up. And I'm like, she's like, no, what? Like, she's literally saying this. No. Oh, come on. And I'm like, just watch the movie. And she's like, and she's shaking her head. I'm like, oh boy. And I have a, you know, I'm a 21-year-old who was watching it, and she was kind of like shrugging, and just, she was like back on her phone again, like typing. And my wife,
oh, man.
Right? So it's one of those, right? So you automatically, and we're sitting in the living room, and you know, we got the dim lights and the popcorn, and we're kind of like trying to make a thing out of it. And it, and so this is where, and I understand, like it's a comic movie, and so you're trying to, but it doesn't give you that same feeling that the Marvel movies do. And that's, and this is what, especially for my 11-year-old, this is what she compares everything to. This is what she has. Like we, you know, at my age, my big age, you know, I've seen horrible superhero films, but this is, she only has that story to compare it to. And so so she's thinking of, all right, I'm going to be pulled into the character. I'm going to be pulled into this. I'm pulled into that part of it. And it just wasn't connecting for her. It definitely didn't connect for me. And I can't say I'm disappointed. I just kind of expected it.
Have you purposely not allowed her to watch the Fantastic Four films? You spared her?
Yeah, I spared her.
Good job.
I spared her from those. She's not interested in those films anyway. Like she's interested in like the Marvel films somewhat. The Star Wars films she's interested in. But yeah, and she's a musical kid anyway, so she likes Hamilton and that kind of stuff. Like, so she's interested in that stuff. But but if it's gonna be superhero film, it better click, and she better like it. It better be action worthy. And she hates she ended up hating the same thing I hate about the film, which they brought back from the first film to this film, was the beauty shot running. You guys remember the beauty shot running? Like she's Wonder Woman is running, but it's a beauty shot. She said, "Is this a photo shoot?" Like, I was, so
Ibrahim, he had tweeted, and it was so tight. It was like, I don't want to misquote you, but Ibrahim gave props to everyone, the creatives involved with the film.
Oh, and yeah, I said something like, "Shout out to the cast for doing their best." Or whatever, like I just kind of left it at that.
Exactly.
I agree with Andre. Like I thought the acting, you know, was like you got good actors in this movie and everybody was doing their best, but then you know, and the production value is evident on the screen.
Yep.
But then you got people like, you know, pouring their hearts out emotionally talking about wishes.
It's like, right.
What? It's just I couldn't, you know. I feel exactly how you felt about it, Andre. Everything you said, I completely agree with.
It's not badly acted. Like that's the thing. It's not a badly acted film. Like you believe them. It's just you don't believe the story.
It's a poor idea.
I'm surprised no one said anything. The actors, the director, they have a say. You know, they can. I mean, it sounds like it was so ridiculous that it doesn't matter, but
I think part of what happened was Jeff Johns, who co-wrote it and produced it, he used to be the head of DC Films, and before that, he was the chief creative officer of DC's publishing side. He started his career as an assistant for Richard Donner, right? So he loves the Donner Superman movie, and you can see that movie all over Wonder Woman 84.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's almost direct homages to it, several parts to it. And a lot of it feels like that, you know, Superman the movie would be very earnest, and then it would turn like, geez, Mr. Luthor, you know, and it was corny, like, right? And this movie had a lot of that in it. And I think, you know, what happened was as these comic book properties started to become valuable IPs in movies, he became the go-to guy because he was a big writer at DC at the time, and he also had a foot in the film industry. So they said, this is the guy. This guy knows these heroes, will hire him, right? Mm-hmm. But then, like, the first movie that he was, you know, in charge of was Green Lantern. And for some reason, they kept just letting that man trip upwards. until we get, you know, where we are today. So it's
he failed up. Wow.
Yeah.
You want to know, what does he have? Who does he have something on? Because
I'm not going to say it on this, but there, you know, I've heard rumblings, you know, from reputable sources within, you know, the DC house that, you know, there was some stuff going on. So I think there was some leverage, you know.
He's a made man. Yeah. Unbelievable. So Dre mentioned Star Wars in the Marvel film, so I'm going to jump into this last question for you guys. For me, it's pretty easy. HBO Max versus Disney. Now, here's the thing. HBO Max has some really, really great content coming around, especially with the DC TV shows. What they just gave us with Lovecraft Country, The Watchmen. Like, HBO is bringing it. They're really bringing it. Do I think that they're going to be a contender for Disney Plus? I don't know, man. Disney Plus, just Star Wars alone, just dropped 10 shows.
Yeah. Well, they dropped the names for 10 shows.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They've done a lot of showing. They haven't done a lot of proving yet, I think.
I think it did a lot of. The Mandalorian is all the proving I need. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know, I don't even like Star Wars, and I love The Mandalorian. So
that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're doing more of this, oh, okay. All right.
I feel like when you watch Disney Plus, you enter into the Disney world.
Yeah.
Which makes, that's a big thing. That's a big deal, especially a lot of our generation. We're talking about going to movie theaters, you know, like that's what we did. We entered into a world. And when we were a kid, the kids, they don't have that right now. And that is that. That's an example of it. So I'm going to say Disney Plus for now. Plus, I work for Disney, so.
We can't underestimate, though, as far as with kids, HBO has the new episodes of Sesame Street.
Facts.
Like, Sesame Street has a bigger budget now. Like, facts. It's the production value has really stepped up, and that can't be slept on as a value to, like, the little ones. So true. I think it's really that they're the only two services that you actually need. Unless you're like into horror and you need that specific streaming service.
Yeah, like Shudder or something.
Right. But really, if you have HBO and Disney Plus, or even say the Disney Plus bundle with ESPN.
Right.
Like, you kind of, that replaces cable.
The HBO Max bundle has changed too. Now, I think like Cartoon Network's in there. It's like Turner Movie Classic. There's a bunch of different subchannels that are now part of the app now. Like, it's just crazy. I'm like, I can watch any of the Boondocks episodes right now. Nice movie.
I'd be curious to learn more about how the back end stuff works for the companies, because I think HBO Max has a much wider variety of content in terms of, you know, genre and age groups and stuff. And Disney Plus is a much more of a specific thing. However, I think Disney Plus is going to be the one that's on a loop in everyone's households, because kids will watch a Disney movie 10 times a week. You know what I mean?
True.
Yeah. So I don't know if they're getting money from, you know, like, they're going to have to start changing up like point systems, I would imagine, for all this stuff. Right. So, you know, who knows how that plays out.
Well, then there's also this thing where it's like, sometimes if you give me too many options, I'm just stuck. Too many options.
You're paralyzed.
There's too many versions across too many boards. And as a human being and as a consumer, you know, part of marketing is just feed people what you want them to eat. So sometimes it's too much going on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can still watch some of those things that y'all were talking about, like the Boondocks and some of that, without HBO Max. That doesn't mean that you know, won't get HBO Max or won't use my sister's password and stuff, but
there we go.
I'm not gonna front. Disney Plus does feel like a buffet within a buffet within a buffet.
Right.
But I do love the ability to just hop in and check out any movie I want from, you know, the MCU and Star Wars universe at a moment's notice and just have it.
But that's, you know, that's another interesting thing though, Ambush, right? Because like, I feel like most of us already have that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, Disney Plus is relatively new. Like, most of us have the vault of the Marvel stuff or the, you know, Disney animated things or whatever. So it's like,
yeah.
I wonder how, I mean, but then again, we're also in an era where we're like, yeah, I have it, but I can just press some buttons and watch it. I'm not going to
right,
it
right, exactly. It's definitely the laser disc. Why pull out the laser disc?
It's definitely to press a button. I can watch it right now. I think for me, it's Disney Plus, but I think HBO Max, like what Ambush said, definitely has a plethora of stuff. Like they have across all the genres, and yeah. So what Disney Plus has, you know, Disney owns Hulu, right? So their adult stuff is going to Hulu. Their quote, I put you guys air quote adult stuff, like so they're, you know, more, you know, adult stuff goes to Hulu, including the FX stuff, which is really good. Like Legion is really good.
Yeah.
So you have
That's true. I forget they own Fox and everything. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So you have that content, but with Disney Plus, you know, it's to the point where, like you said, it, you know, it's at a press of a button. I think with HBO Max, they had to make this big, you know, splash. They had to do something, you know, genre shifting, shake the earth with, oh, we're going to put our whole, you know, our whole slate on day and date. You know, you can still see it at the theaters. And to me, I still think that if things go well, which I don't know if they will with the vaccine, I have a feeling that towards the end of the summer, they're going to change their mind. If people are able to get out and do stuff, if the pandemic, if these cases lower, if the deaths lower, by the end of the summer, I have a feeling that they're going to say, oh, so much for that. And because they can always push the button and go back.
They definitely can. They definitely
because
can.
They've done it again. And they can always come up with a, you know, it's all about money. So there's always an excuse. They can always come up with another excuse.
Yeah.
To change their mind. But with Disney's still holding on to their theater releases. And I was kind of surprised they didn't do it with Black Widow, with, you know, like the Mulan thing. Oh, here's $30. I too paid $30 for Mulan. I haven't watched it yet. my daughter watched it. I haven't watched it yet. And some friends watched it. If you know what I mean. So
yes.
Sharing is caring. So at Disney, with, you know, they're dropping all these series, they're keeping us tied in with the MCU through all these series that are coming, WandaVision and Loki, and so they have those locked in people. I mean, they pulled a bunch of us in even more with Mandalorian, and I'm a big Boba Fett guy, and then you know, I showed just my wife and daughter. I say, sit down, watch the season finale of Mandalorian. They've never watched never watched an episode. I said, just watch this episode. And they were like, really? Like, we don't.
Wait,
I was like,
season one or season two?
Season two.
Oh.
So they watched the, you know, the recap of whatever happened. By the end of that episode, I am not joking, they were jumping up and down screaming. So, and these are, you know, my daughter's into Star Wars, my wife less so, but by the end of that episode, they were like, and I was like, see, this is how Disney can get you, because they have the nostalgia, they have great storytelling, because this is what Disney does. Disney tells stories. I don't care what it is. They will have you believing in, you know, ants that talk. They will have you crying in the first 10 minutes of Up. That's what Disney does well, and you know,
they just have they do a really good job of branding too, like all their different entities. Yes. Like if you're gonna watch something big and grand and with lots of music and big sounds and you know what I mean, all of that,
yes.
And then you can turn right around and go watch The Little Fires on Hulu, like you know what I'm saying, like,
yep. Right.
Like,
right.
And that is not geared to the same person, so it's a branding thing too.
Definitely,
yeah.
More focused, which we already talked about, you know, not being that focused, you know what I'm saying? So.
Well, and look at the rollout of the HBO streaming stuff being so unfocused too. I mean, you had Go, you had Max, you had Now, you had, and then it was
right.
Like,
it was, you know,
which do I watch this on? Yeah. And I mean, then they had their DC Universe app with exclusive shows, but then those got pulled and now they're on Max, and then now the DC app is just for comics or whatever. So it's like,
so Ibrahim, like I'm completely stuck because I had the DC app, right? I haven't been back to the app since everything got pulled over to HBO Max, and I'm like, what do I need this app for? I'm not reading comics on my television. That's what I'm not doing.
Right.
I'm still buying comics weekly, but I have no desire to engage with comics digitally. None. Zero.
I'm surprised comics don't have those voiceovers yet. Like, you know, like more like
like Will I Am did?
Yeah. I'm surprised they don't have that going on more often than not. Like,
it's so funny, you know, my very first comic was, it came with a cassette tape. In 1988 or 89 or something like that. And like, that's how I learned to read, because I just put that on and I would listen to the words and then I would, you know, read the word balloons along with it. And that's, I don't know, you know, they've really, part of the reason why we haven't seen a really abundant digital experience for comics is twofold. Number one, they're worried about alienating the physical stores, which are have kept the industry afloat, you know, right, all these years.
Right.
Number two, piracy is a major, major problem in comics, because once they go digital, and you know, people just rip them. I mean, day and date, you know, you can read a comic on a pirated site, and you have pirate readers outnumber a lot of the actual like legitimate purchases.
Gotcha.
Now, there's definitely an argument to be made that, you know, and I think maybe Andre mentioned this about the Warner movies all going to streaming. There's a backflow, you know, down the stream. You catch those people; they come in for other, you know, conventions and movies and other aspects of
the movies themselves.
Yeah,
right. So, you know, but yeah, I think that's a very long way to answer Janelle's question as to why they don't do that anymore.
So with everything you guys are saying, how realistic? I've heard some rumors, but you know, rumors. How realistic is it that we could see a DC Marvel merger, Warner actually getting out of the comic book business, Marvel DC essentially falling under Disney and
if,
Jesus,
keeping that, it would never happen.
Never happen.
It would never happen. What they will do, though, I think is, I do think it is possible we will see Warner get out of the publishing business and just license their IPs to other comic book companies.
Okay.
But it wouldn't be Marvel. It would be like IDW and, you know, smaller companies that are known for doing a lot of licensed properties. I mean, Marvel actually already sub-licenses some of their Star Wars content for like the younger readership groups to IDW. So it's not unprecedented, and they've been moving, you know, DC just changed the way they distribute their comics. It used to be through this one sort of monopolized system, and then they started going through these other channels, and that was a big to do within the industry. So a lot of people are arguing that they're already kind of laying the groundwork for that. And then with the recent layoffs and editorial we've seen, you know, it seems like it's another nail in that coffin. But, you know, I mean, ultimately they're going to keep these things going in print, because you know, it's really inexpensive R&D for them, and you know, it keeps the IPs in their ownership. You know, because eventually things can lapse and go in the public domain, obviously, right? So as long as they keep those wheels turning, you know, there's always going to be something coming out because of it.
Man, but Warner Brothers is not, this is what they're doing. They're basically just going to take over the theater world. They're going to wait for COVID to go away, and then all the theaters are going to be Warner Brothers.
Yikes.
like instead of like major AMC, move. Cinemark and all that, we're going to see like Warner Brothers all theaters?
Guys, yep. Mm-hmm. They're going to bankrupt them and then merge with them.
Wow.
Yeah, I know that they were trying to stop, because there was a thing about monopoly and studios not being able to own theaters, and now it's a possibility if they can own theaters again, which I don't know how great it is for creators or low budget filmmakers. Because, you know, we want to make films that, you know, eventually we go in a theater. But, you know, streaming will work, you know, for some of the people who, you know, want to make smaller, quote unquote, smaller films, really lower budget films. But yeah, I think that's definitely where they want to take it. You know, they can easily be Warner theaters, Disney theaters, Netflix theaters.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, and you can go see your whatever your counterpart is for the film you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Oh yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. But you know, with the streaming, with HBO Max, you know, I still think that this play, if they last through the whole 2021, I still think that the whole idea is to get back. It's the, you know, it's the free crack giveaway. So with all of these sequels, you know, you'll get Dune 2, and so you have all these people who have seen it because they've seen it on HBO Max, and then okay, now the you only see Dune 2 in theaters. You only see Wonder Woman 3 in theaters. You only see, you know, there won't be a Jesus and a Black Messiah part 2, but you know, so you'll have these, so you kind of, you know, bring in these eyes. And it's something that, you know, Disney has done well, and this has been Disney's plan. So, and Warner has also been trying to, well, the DC side has been, you know, following behind Marvel, and Jeff Johns is no Kevin Feige. So
no.
And it's the plan. So if you have the plan, and since Disney has billions and billions of dollars and all the creators in the world, they can make these plans. They make long-term plans. I know I'm a stockholder. And it works out for them that way. And I think that with the leadership at Warner, you really need people who are going to make long-term plans and stick to them in a smart way. That's what's been the problem. That was a problem with Justice League. That was a problem with Batman Superman. Everybody they tried to rush to the money, and when you left, and they got the money, but you also alienated a big part of the excitement of the audience.
They really should have chilled out. They were looking across the street at the Infinity Saga and thinking they needed to rush to listen. That's 20 something films in the making. Chill out.
We got a cinematic universe at home.
You know what I'm saying? Like, y'all gotta chill out. I'm excited about this DC Black Label shit. Like, you know, Joker and the Robert Pattinson Batman. Like, I'm excited about how they're expanding the universe and the way they did with Flashpoint and the TV series to kind of merge everything together. Like, I'm excited about the possibilities, but there's always this itching in the back of my throat. That's like, they're gonna fuck this up again. They're gonna
because they're not. Sorry to cut you off. But go ahead. It's because partially because it's not. They're not taking the lead of the storytellers who write the comics. Like they're not taking this measured effect, like this measured approach to. We're gonna build to it. We're gonna build to it. Here it comes. Here it comes. And boom. That's you know. That's what DC comic books have been good for that. But they're not doing that in the films. They're just jumping to it. Marvel has an incredible universe. They slow walk this through so much. I mean, and that's what the films have to do. And I know you have to make your money now, but if you're smart and you slow walk it and you give us the story like they did with Mandalorian, because Mandalorian, look how long it took them, 2 seasons to get to like the stuff that some. Right. It took them so long to get to some of the little things that, now I can't even say little things, the big presence that people have been waiting for. But
we didn't even know we were waiting for it. That's the best part. Yeah. The way they told that story, they gave us things we didn't even know we wanted.
Yep.
It was,
we didn't even know the co-star's name.
Bruh.
That popped in like 15 episodes into the
series.
We were calling him Baby Yoda for a season and a half. Well, we still call him Baby Yoda.
Yeah, we didn't know his name, and we didn't see other dude's face either.
Right.
Like, they were just really... Yeah, you know, with the Warner DC slate of movies, like, they started going after the money, you know, with, like, they Man of Steel did well, and they said, tight, we got it. We're doing it, you know what I mean? And then they gave Zack Snyder the reins, and he had a very specific vision that was Zack Snyder's vision. It's not the general zeitgeist vision of these characters, right?
Right.
Whereas
right.
Marvel, that's what Marvel did. Kevin Feige knew what people expected from these characters, and they put that into the movies. Right. And so, you know, DC thought that they were, or the Warner division of, or the DC division of Warner rather, thought that, you know, okay, we got this, we're doing this. And then Batman vs. Superman came out, and it was extremely polarizing and underperformed a bit from what they were expecting. Mm-hmm. And then they got cold feet with Justice League, and they completely, you know, so it's like, and they did the same thing with Suicide Squad. These movies that had a specific, directorial vision started getting chopped up and put together on the cutting room floor by executives and you know, audience screeners and stuff like that. So, you know, when you take a David Ayer, you know, movie and you go, make it funny, that's how you end up with Suicide Squad.
Right. You know? Right. I watched that again 2 weeks ago just to, I don't know, put myself through it. They that was a bad film, dude. You had Will Smith in it. That was a bad film. Like, what?
You know, it's funny. I don't, my bar has lowered exponentially for these. Like, I can watch Suicide Squad and have a perfectly good time. Like, while also acknowledging that it's not a good movie. You know what I mean? Right. Like, and
I do that with a lot of movies, actually.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, that's my thing. It's my thing. That's what I do.
Well, especially I imagine, Janelle, for you, because you know how the sausage is made on such a level too, that you kind of have to remove yourself, right? And just like,
definitely, and just take things for what they are. A lot of them kind of remind me of being like a kid, being like 13 in the middle of the night, like before a TV went off, and like just watching whatever was there and enjoying it because you ain't got nothing else to enjoy, and that's what they put up there for you. So just deal with it.
Right, like, that's the channel that comes in.
Yeah, for what it is. For what it is, everything's not a masterpiece, and every masterpiece ain't the same type of masterpiece as the next one either. So
facts,
right?
Facts.
See, I get mad when I start seeing films for a production. Like if I like because I, which is why I think I like the theater experience because I can go in and I try to turn it off. So, but if I go in, after a while, if something starts making me pay attention to production, specifically production and how it's done, then I'm just like, like the movie is ruined for me. And that's why Dunkirk was ruined for me because I realized like maybe 15 or 20 minutes in a thing that he was doing with the sound, and it immediately turned me off from the entire film. I was like,
wow.
It was all in the sound mix. And I was like, oh, I know what he's doing with the sound mix. And it annoyed me. And then I'm like, Janelle, I started seeing things. Oh, that's what he's doing with this. Oh, this is going to move this. That's, oh, okay, I know what this next shot's going to be. Yep, there it goes.
I had to make a movie, though.
Right, I know. But it just, like, I want to, as a filmmaker, I want to go in and turn it off. Like, I want to just enjoy. So if you can just bring me into your world and I'm in your world and I'm sitting quiet and peacefully unlike anybody else, then I'm great. But if I start that's where at Dunkirk we're towards the end and the sound mix thing, I'm like, he's gonna turn it off now. 3 seconds later, it went off, and I was like, "Oh, you've got to be kidding me, Nolan."
But did you? Okay, so I have a question. Did you notice? Was it sound mixing? Because the sound mixer literally is on set, but then there's
No, it wasn't sound mixing. It was actually a sound effect. So what he was doing was Did you guys see Dunkirk?
I haven't
a long time
yet.
Ago. Yeah, I did.
You're not gonna spoil it for me. Go ahead.
Yeah.
All right. He started this thing with the watch ticking, right? Mm-hmm. So he starts this thing with the watch ticking. This guy has a pocket watch. And so he pulls up the pocket watch and he listens to it. And I think it's like his father's pocket watch or something to that effect. So it's ticking. And from then he puts it in his pocket or whatever. And from then on, you hear the ticking in the mix, right? Well, not the mix, but the overall sound, right? So you hear the ticking. The ticking causes you as a viewer to get anxious.
Yeah.
And keeps it. So the ticking happens from this point on, like, 30 minutes in until when the moment is resolved and the movie is resolved and like, you know, it's like 5 minutes left or 10 minutes left or whatever. And the kid like sitting on the boat and I'm like, it's like ticking. But it annoyed me because I was like, I know what you're doing. Stop this. And have the movie. Like, stop this. I know. It's almost like, you know, a kid, like, you know, poking your ow, stop it. Ow, stop it. Like,
Cut it out.
And so by the time it, you know, so I was like, oh, right. So now it's over and now the ticking's going to stop now, right? And it stopped. And I was just like, you're
man. In. Andre watched that whole movie with Christopher Nolan's finger in his face going, I'm not touching you.
It's so funny. It's a testament to, let's go back to Christopher Nolan and his issue with not releasing his film in the theaters. It's like, dog, please. Like, You know what I mean? Like, you literally just stuck your finger in my face in 2017. You know what I'm saying? How many hours was that? Two something? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Things for what they are. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm totally that type of person now. Period. That goes to everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Like, yeah. In the last several years, like, if it takes me out of real life, I'm good.
Right. That's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes the simplest things are the best. Like, literally, the Joker was my favorite DC movie. Like, oh, that's the last one. That was my favorite.
It was incredible.
Like, I watched that thing so many times. I haven't watched a movie that many times as a grown up in the film business in a long time. I was showing that thing to everybody. I was like, you gotta see this.
And it's not perfect, but it's still perfect. Great.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I think the MCU movies, because even not all of them are perfect,
right?
But they've raised the bar so much in the genre, right, that people think that that's the expectation. It's like, no, you can still take unique angles to storytelling and take some creative risk and just make it enjoyable.
Yeah.
Right.
To me, it's perfectly imperfect. I mean, before I was in the film business, I was a dancer. I was a dancer at Filadenko. So there's a certain level of analog that I'm always going to, like, love. Like, one of my favorite dancers at Filadenko was this really big guy named Tony. Like, in order to be a dancer, there's like weight checks and stuff, you know what I'm saying? But not for Black people, you know? Like, we got the Dance Theater Harlem, Albanelli, Filadenko, and some of the best dancers, Black dancers, were not skinny little ballerinas. Like, Judith Jameson was 5'10" tall and muscular as hell. The Misty Copeland is muscular as hell, and she's one of the best ballet dancers in the world. So, like, imperfections to me are beautiful when they are not ignored, but when they're used, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You hear that, Chris? You hear that? This has been amazing. I want to thank you guys so much for your time. This was great. So at the end of the day, everyone's going to stay home and watch these movies on the streaming service. Yep. No one's rolling the dice. And we're going to just watch how this goes. We all got our fingers crossed. Hopefully we can return to some semblance of the old world, but ultimately, I agree with the points that everyone made, that the industry has a responsibility to deliver this content in the safest way possible. And that's all the way around. So these movie theaters, you know, if you used to have eight theaters, knock that shit down to 4, open some walls up, like make it work, get new ventilation, like make the changes that need to be made so we can return back to that movie experience. Because, man, there are some long-term effects to these types of decisions. And again, this is COVID-19. We don't know what's going to happen with COVID-21, COVID-23. Like, you know. Yeah, you know. The thing's already mutating. Let's stop playing around.
You just give me a headache.
COVID-22 electric boogaloo.
You know what I'm saying?
R.I.P. Shabadoo.
R.I.P. Shabadoo.
R.I.P. R.I.P. MF Doom. I got to do it. That's not in there real quick. But cool. Thank you all for tuning in. I want to thank my guests again. This has been A Podcast Has No Name. If everyone wants to check you guys out, where would they do that online? What do you guys got going on? Give me some social media tags. Twitter, Instagram, what do y'all prefer?
Oh, I don't do... my social media is so weird. My social media, you can barely... I mean, look, sometimes I just put the movie I worked on last on there, and then that's it. I don't really do social media like that. Just check out my IMDb. My name is Janelle Coney. Social media is reserved for me and my family.
It's Sean Mick for me. ITSSEANMC. I never talk about movies because I watch like 3 a year. I talk about a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, he does. Dre.
I'm at Andre Cole. Mostly on Twitter, you'll hear me yelling about the current administration. Every now and again, I'll talk about the pandemic, but then I'll get in some film stuff because I've been trying to be nice to creators. I've been trying. So, but yeah, at Andre Cole, and then on Instagram, you'll see me just being mad. But
Ibrahim.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Ibrahim underscore M underscore. That's IBRAHIM. And same handle on Instagram with art at the end of it. You know, I definitely talk about the administration and all the bullshit going on, but I also post art too. So more so on Instagram. But I got a book coming out. I'm going to be pumping that pretty hard. So
yeah,
advance apologies for all of that.
Wait, quick, tell us about the book. Can you?
Yeah, it's called Count, and it's a sci-fi, it's kind of a sci-fantasy reimagining of the Count of Monte Cristo.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really proud of it, and you know, I added a lot of stuff to it while keeping kind of the core sort of, you know, it's like the granddaddy of all revenge stories, you know, and I love revenge stories. So it's a bit of that, but there's also a lot about like revolution and social justice type of, you know, themes in there too. And, you know, I made it not about a bunch of white guys. so
I love revenge.
But yeah, it comes out in March.
Oh, tight. Cool.
Thank you.
All right, y'all. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.
Catch y'all next time. Thank y'all.
Oh, great. You're still there. Thank you for listening to another episode of A Podcast That Has No Name. If this is your first time, check us out. Please make sure you subscribe. We're on Apple Music, Spotify, Google, all the places where you listen to podcasts. And follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Podcast Has No Name. Deuces.
Subscribe, please.
Click and comment.